Is Tim Connelly headed to Minnesota? We say goodbye to Jordy Fernandez. Joins the Kings. Best of luck there. Bones Island makes a rookie team. Yeah, no, the big thing is Tim Connelly. That's the big thing. This is Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'd like to thank you for making us your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms. We'd also like to thank today's sponsor of Locked On Nuggets, Sakara Nutrition. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish. Go to sakara.com/lockedon20 or enter code LOCKEDON20 for 20% off at checkout. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network. His name's Adam Mares. Find him on Twitter at Adam_Mares. And, well, news broke yesterday.
Good one. Yeah.
That Tim Connelly is in, quote, serious talks to become president of basketball operations for the Minnesota Timberwolves. That was backed up by reporting from Denver Post's own Mike Singer. There's a lot to get into about this. I would say the three bullet points are why money, how yet to be determined, and will it happen?
Oh, I think another bullet point is just what's the fallout? What does it mean? What are some of
we're in the is it going to happen? And then like if it happens, which both of you and I are leaning towards it happening.
I slightly lean. There's a lot of interesting details to get into this. I'll be honest, man. People might have noticed, the people that follow on social media, I had not commented on this yet. In large part because this is, I think, there's a lot of things here that I don't want to be wrong about. So a lot last night was a lot of talking to people, a lot of gathering information, trying to see some perspectives. Because I think I there's a lot of like people go to the default. Here's the take. Here's the angle. Here's what's happening. And just like the more you look around, the more I think there's like some very there's layers to this discussion. So that's why I'm excited to get into this.
All right. Well, let's just start here.
By the way, first of all, let me say this. I actually had heard this a week ago. I believe that this is a thing that has been coming for weeks, meaning that the conversation, I think, has been happening for weeks. We all commented on the fact that Calvin Booth doing an exit interview was kind of strange. I mean, it could be nothing. This could be completely unrelated. But we all noted, like, my takeaway was, I wonder if Cal has opportunities this summer on another team that maybe they're, you know, starting to prepare him for this or that. Maybe, again, maybe disconnected, but maybe it was they felt this coming and were like, hey, let's start to introduce Cal to everyone and have him doing these, since maybe he will be doing these in the near future. Again, possibly completely unrelated there, but I had heard last week from a source that Tim was going to, that there was somebody preparing an offer for him that was going to be very strong and that they suspected he would be gone.
Yeah. And they're coming, you know, Singer reported that there were other names that they were also going after. Apparently Sam Presti was on that list. So Masai Ujiri, Bob Myers, and Tim Connelly, along with Sam Presti. So essentially, like, the Timberwolves want to bring in somebody who is a heavy hitter, who is like known to be a great executive. I mean, you're talking about Masai, who I think is a multiple time XOY. You're talking about Bob Myers, who's won XOY multiple championships, and Sam Presti, who has like done. He's just, Sam's one of the best GMs in the league. He's one of the best executives in the league. Right. They're going for it. And new ownership is a lot of this, right? And new ownership, I think, has a lot to do with the offer. There was a report yesterday that it could include ownership stake. Do you have anything more on that?
I mean, just that was part of it, right? But here's what's interesting about this, Matt. The Timberwolves just sold from Glenn Taylor, one of the worst owners in the NBA over his tenure. And they now have it to a new group that includes Alex Rodriguez and as well as some others. But here's the thing that that's weird about their ownership situation. It is sort of being bought on credit in a way, They don't, right at this moment, have a majority stake in it. They are in the process of acquiring a majority stake in it. So they're at this interesting fork in the road where they don't actually have the controlling interest of the team, but they will have it. And on top of that, I am told, and there's been reporting on this, that the funding for that acquisition, almost in some way similar to the Elon Musk Twitter acquisition, is that the funding for it is a little bit ambiguous, meaning I believe that they have a group that can purchase this if they deplete other assets, but that they do not want to do that. They are in the process of trying to continue to raise money with the understanding that they have these check marks to hit to get up to 60% ownership. I think at the moment it's like 20%, something like that. So you're in a weird spot right now in Minnesota in that you're offering ownership and making a big swing, but you might not actually have the ability to do those things. It's almost as if it's, but we will. We are going to have that, and we are going to be able to offer this at a time. So it's just a piece of this that's all weird because it's a new ownership group that I think very little is known about, and the terms of that deal are probably cloudier than they would seem on first reporting. Meaning it might not be quite as cut and dry as, oh yeah, there's also this ownership stake in it. There's also this or that. It might be a little bit more flimsy, I guess, for lack of a better word. Meaning that deal would come on Tim Connelly's end, perhaps with a little bit more risk than would just be assumed.
So I think, to me, the elephant in the room, as it often is. If you're asking, like, why would Tim Connelly leave this job? He has built his career here, essentially, right? His first GM job. He turned down the Wizards job, which was very near and dear to his heart.
Yeah, it's home. It's home. And I think that one was more money, but I don't think it's like the caliber of money that's being offered here. It's my understanding.
Yeah. And the caliber of money that's being offered here is substantial.
Right.
Like, the compensation package, I was told, is just like, it is not comparable. Right. And, you know, it would be very easy to just ask the question of, it is very easy to ask the question of, why don't the Kroenkes just match it? That's a great question. And I do not have any sort of answer other than they don't want to. Like,
well, first of all, we don't know that. Let's just let that play out. I suspect you are right. I think we have a lot of history that tells us that I would be shocked if the Kroenkes stepped up to the plate on this. But to be fair, I we'll see how this all plays out. I imagine that's probably part of what happens today is there's like a, hey, what is the other offer? Like, where does this balance out? And by the way, I don't think this is a leverage play. I don't think this is like Tim Connelly trying to get more money. I think it's Minnesota genuinely had him targeted, had a strategy in place to try to get him, and made him a monster offer.
Tim doesn't have an agent, the last I was aware of. So it's like, there's no leveraging to be really like managed here. Are you with me that the Kroenkes should just match it?
Yeah. I mean, look, here's the funny thing. I think Tim Connelly's great. There's a lot of layers to this. Maybe this almost might be a more, the second segment about why they should or should not match it. But what I'll say is that Tim Connelly has a mixed record when you talk about trades, salaries that he's offered, how long he's kept guys. Malik Beasley, I think he kept too long before trading, lost some of the value there. Will Barton, I think probably was he here a year too long. Like, there's things you could point to that Tim has not been perfect at. But when you look at the aggregate of what he has built here, A+. Denver has become there's a reason. I see some people say, like, is he actually that good? They should let him go, or, you know, have these hot takes about it. And I look at it and goes, there is a team offering him ownership stake. And either way, like, yeah, think about this. This is not a common thing, Matt. There's not a lot of GMs out there that are offered ownership stake. Somebody's offering him ownership stake. That's how much they look at what he's built in Denver and say, we want that. And by the way, a president of basketball operations, it is not just about the players you bring in. It is how do you structure what you are building inside of an organization. Oftentimes a president of basketball operations is tasked with more than just the roster construction. It's culture setting and how we do business here. I think the way the Nuggets have done it is a large part of what has set them up for the success over this run. And it's clouded a little bit by the fact that they lost Jamal Murray for two playoff runs. I mean, so, I think he's been absolutely fantastic. There are real questions, and this was such a big summer for the Denver Nuggets front office, where, like, I think Tim Connelly would be up against answering some of the questions that he has yet to answer. Like, can you pull off some of these deals? Is there trades to be made? Can you get off of Will Barton? Those types of things. Like, this was a real, we're going to find out type of summer. But I think when you step back and look at the aggregate, A plus, and the proof is in the pudding. A team is literally offering him the world to try to come over.
Yeah, it's also not about, like it is with the coaching. People are like, he's a terrible coach. Why? They lost that game. Being an executive goes well beyond all that. I'll tell you, like, just talking to people around the league, like, one of the big advantages for Tim is that there's nobody that's like, that dislikes him. I haven't run into anybody that's like, not a single person that's ever been like, fuck Tim Connelly. Like, not a one. Right.
And that job lends itself to creating enemies.
Yeah. And there's always like, and there's a lot of ego, and Tim honestly doesn't have, Connelly does not have a great amount of ego in my experience. So
he's the Jokic of GMs.
Yeah. And it's a good fit for Denver and all these types of things, and losing him would be pretty bad, but why would it be bad? And we'll get into that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first I want to tell you about Truebill. You know why free trials renew without your consent? I found one the other day that I had just like signed up for and was so annoyed because I missed the date on it. If I just had logged into my Truebill account and caught it, I would have been able to miss it, but I missed out on it. It's a business scam to get out of you why these things renew on without your consent. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. It's the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill. Because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel, Truebill makes it incredibly easy. You just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in just one tap. Truebill has over 2 million users, and that's helped save them over $100 million. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. We're also brought to you by Built Bar. Today I'm going to talk to you about the Brownie Batter Puffs. I love brownies. It's my favorite treat. More than cookies. Love them more than cookies. Love them more than candy bars. Brownies are like the one thing that I am always down for. If my wife is trying to put me in a good mood, she will make a batch of brownies, often as trying to say sorry. And it works. I'm always like, yeah, okay, I'll just take the brownies. That's good. But you know what's even better is getting the brownie batter in a protein bar. With 17 grams of protein and only 7 grams of sugar, along with just 140 calories. It's a protein-infused marshmallow covered in 100% chocolate that tastes like brownie batter. Science, what can't it do, honestly? All Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate, and they're made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. The Brownie Batter Puffs will have you completely forgetting that you're eating a protein bar. No need to pinch yourself. This is real life. Go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us and making us part of your day. Make sure your second listen is the Locked On NBA Big Board. It's got all sorts of draft information that you're going to want to know. Get your rundowns of where the entire board looks like. You can't circle in on the Nuggets pick without knowing what the rest of the board's going to look like. Follow it wherever you get podcasts. It's the Locked On NBA Big Board. All right. So we talked about Tim Connelly and the situation currently. There's a lot of questions about what this means. Let's go through them at the top of the order. What do you think the impact is on Nikola Jokic signing the Supermax extension?
I don't think it has one. I think Jokic will sign the Supermax, but I do think it has a major impact on Jokic and about this. I've told you for a long time, I am so at ease with Jokic remaining in Denver for the entirety of his career until last night. Because to me, I think he signs the Supermax. That's so much money. I think he's happy here. I think he wants to finish it out. But here's the thing. The things people don't realize, when we said there's a word to describe the Kroenke organization, the Kroenke outfit, like if there was a word, we said family, because I really do think that's part of it. They have a small group of people that work it. It's a mom and pop shop, the way that the Kroenkes run the Denver Nuggets. There's strengths to that. There's weaknesses to it. There's no question about it. But one of the things is they have a very small group, and it's a very intimate group of people, and that fits Jokic so perfectly. To me, the fallout isn't, will he sign the Supermax? To me, the fallout is, he signs it, you better have a really good year next year, You better have a good year after that, because I think Jokic's loyalty diminishes a little bit when you lose Tim Conley. The same would be true, by the way, for Michael Malone. And I think that Jokic's loyalty has always been more tied to, does he feel like the Nuggets are doing what they can to win? And I think if you lose Tim Conley, you better do a good job on your replacement. You better do a good job after that, because if not, that's where I think Jokic looks around and says, hey, man, I was committed when you guys were committed. If you're not, then I might look around. So to me, that's the big fallout of this is, I think if I'm guessing if the Kroenkes were to call, and I would hope they would call Nikola and talk to him or have had conversations with him, my hunch is that he would be pretty forceful and effusive in his praise, saying, hey, you guys need to match or you need to bring him here. So that's my thing. It's not about what he signed the Supermax. It's, I feel like there's almost a clock that starts ticking the moment you lose Tim Conley.
Agree. I think he signs. I said yesterday, it goes from 100% he's going to sign the Supermax to 90% he signs the Supermax, which is still extremely likely that he's going to sign the Supermax.
I honestly think he signed. I mean, it's just too much money, and it's the modern NBA. Like, is somebody not going to trade for Nikola Jokic if he, like, wanted out? I mean,
right.
This is how it works.
Right. So he's going to sign it. I think he stays. But, you know, look, one of the killer things here is not only is it Tim is gone, but it's Arturis too. Like, you have the two guys right. That were the architects of building the foundation that are gone now. The only guy that's remaining.
And the guys who he has loyalty to. Like, those are the guys that found him. Arturis and Tim Conley.
Yeah. And then Tommy Balchettis deserves to be mentioned in that conversation. But, Calvin's relatively new. Comparatively. So right. That's the next thing is who replaces him is the question. If he leaves, which he is not.
Well, hold on. Let me just say one other part of this. So I do think that the loyalty and connection, I mean, Tim Conley was there in Sombor. Like, that meant a lot to him. They have relationships. Like, again, I don't think Nikola is a guy that has a ton of friends in Denver. His friends are the organization. Like, these are the people that he feels comfortable with and this or that. So you start to lose those pieces. But the other part before you get to the who replaces him is this is arguably the most important offseason of the Jokic era. This is the offseason where everything goes all in, and it's like, hey, we got to make moves. They talked about it in their exit interviews. This is the time to change hands.
Yeah.
To change decision makers right before the draft, right before free agency. I mean, it's always tough. And by the way, this is always the time that new GMs are hired. But it's always tough. The first season of a new GM is almost always shaky because you don't have a lot of time. You got to do all this. So to me, that's the biggest part of it is you talk about this is the most important 12-week stretch of the Jokic era from a decision-making standpoint, and you might change decision makers. That's really uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, I think there's just always the biggest thing is it usually leads to inaction because you're just trying to get things stabilized. Like, you're just trying to get into the job and get used to it, you know? And like for Calvin, he's already the GM. So there is a little bit of like integration there. My prediction would probably be that Calvin would take over maybe for a year and then they would hire a president of basketball operations either above Calvin or
I agree.
Or bring in a new staff as Calvin would probably find another opportunity. So I think it's deeply concerning at this point in the franchise. Daniel says, hey Dan, the last time we changed GMs right before the draft, we traded Gobert to Utah for cash.
It's accurate, but it's also a very different situation. I mean, I don't think Denver would be in that one. That was in a we're changing everything. We're trying to recycle. This would be more, it's almost in some ways harder. Like, that screw up was a bad one, but at least it was coming at a point when Denver was bottoming out or like in the process. I know they weren't necessarily intending to. They wanted to keep things going, but it was at least a point where we can logically say it was at a rebirth of the Nuggets or a recycling of the Nuggets. Right now, it's not. You cannot afford to screw up this offseason. If you're the Denver Nuggets, you cannot do it. It will have, depending on how bad it is, can have ripple effects that last you the entirety of the Jokic era. You cannot screw up this offseason. So while I do think there is a scenario where if you handed it off to Calvin Booth and Tommy Balchettis, like, they could come in and execute a game plan and feel very confident, it still puts you on shaky ground and you better get it right.
Yeah. David asked, why wouldn't Calvin Booth be the long-term answer? Very well could be.
I don't think the Kroenkes would commit to that right away. I think you're right. They would play it out as a almost an interim type situation. Like, well, let's see how you do.
Yeah. Let me be very clear on this. The NBA is very rarely a meritocracy. There are some things in which it's a meritocracy about,
right?
But especially at the executive level, it very rarely is. And like a lot of this, I'll be blunt. I think to me, it's a lot of it is like, how involved does Stan get in the process? That to me is the thing. Cause I think Josh Kroenke is very likely to be very much like, no, Calvin's doing a really good job. Like if you look at the overall performance level, like he fits our culture. He's, you know, Tim brought him in, like he's integrated, like he's done a good job. He's look at these things that we've accomplished. I think Stan is much more likely to be like, but I know this guy. I've known this guy forever. And I think he'll do a good job. Like that's one of the concerns always, I think, with ownership. You're kind of nodding your head. You don't agree?
I just don't know. I mean, like every owner has a flaw. I mean, in my experience, they all have different ones. Like, you know, some are cheap and some metal. And
some are cheap. Just yeah. Theoretically.
Yeah, theoretically. I think the Kroenkes, I think their thing is that they are not always, they have so many different businesses going on and different teams that I think they are not always, their eye is not always on the ball in an important way. I think that's their biggest thing. It can be a blessing and a curse. The Kroenkes, I think being out of the way as an owner can be the best thing you can do. Like just, hey, you guys go to work. But sometimes you need an owner. Like, hey, we need you to really settle this altitude TV dispute. Like we need you to get, roll the sleeves up and come out here and this is where you're needed. And I think the Kroenke, Stan Kroenke is, I mean, a little cheap. I mean, I'm going to say a lot cheap. And especially on things that don't include salary cap, like training facilities and those types of things. He's very cheap. But also I think he could be absentee. And so those are the things. But, you know, there's other owners. And by the way, I hear this new ownership group. This is sort of the reputation they have. Comes in with all the promises of any new owner. Like, hey, we know we're going to build a team. And then, hey, what do you think about this guy? Like, wait, what are you doing? What are you doing, owner, trying to give me advice on who to pick up and what to do? So I think the Minnesota group might be a little bit of a meddler, as well as maybe just a little crazy. I'll say the number one ownership, I think, flaw is, in my experience, ultra wealthy people think they know everything. I think the number one ownership flaw is, hey, I've made a lot of business doing this one thing. Let me tell you how to run a basketball team because I have knowledge of all things. But the Kroenkes, I think, are more their issue is not involved enough in the areas that an owner needs to be involved.
I mean, look, my experience with them over the decade has been that they're willing to spend on players if the players are in pursuit of a championship. That's why it's like, hey, they're gonna, you know, hey, we're gonna pay the luxury tax. Look at all the money that we give out, right? But Malone was one of the lower paid coaches for a long time. And Tim was one of the lower paid executives for a long time.
Right.
Like that's where they save money. Masai Ujiri, like everyone knew. Everyone knew how good Masai was. Right. Like it was apparent from the get go. Like he was a hot name before he took over in Denver. And then he wins XOY and the Raptors come in with this offer. And like, don't get me wrong. Like MLSE made him a dynamite offer. Like they basically they funded Basketball Africa. Like
right.
There's a huge amount that went into Masai's offer, and Masai
similar to the Minnesota one though. Like this is like a similar situation where it's like, hey, we're not just gonna like we really value you, so we're gonna do some unconventional things as part of your package to come over here, which is kind of what Minnesota's doing for Tim.
Yeah, but I'll also say this like. Masaya was also offered, like, and has in Toronto, like, they backed that up, unparalleled power and control.
Oh, right. Totally. And they backed the big point being they backed it up. A new ownership group might promise those things, but we just don't know
well,
who they are
not
yet.
Not only that, but, like, you're this is one of the things, like, I've explained this is you're never going to, like, KSE is a very large organization, and there is a lot of people that are involved in KSE, and there are layers to those power structures. And that's not to say that Tim hasn't, like, Tim's carved out, like, his control.
Yeah.
Like, Tim Connolly has had control of that, of the organization over since, for, I don't know, about, I would say about 4 or 5 years now. Tim's had, like, what I would consider to be, because once you have success, it's like, no. Like, you're the guy in charge now. You don't have to, but that's one of the things that I think plays a part here is there may be riskier in Minnesota because of the new ownership group, right? Like, if you fail, they're more likely to be like, all right, you're not the guy. Who, like, who's next?
Or they might just make your life miserable. And I think Tim Tomlin is the type of guy that if things are, I mean, there's, everybody has a breaking point, right? Like, everybody has, there's enough money, I'll do when he'll be miserable if that's what it takes. But I think that there's, Tim loves Colorado. He loves the Denver Nuggets. He loves the team that he's built. He loves his coworkers. Like, I think Tim's preference is far and away to remain in Denver. It's just a matter of, hey, can I have generational money here? Like, am I make enough money and have an ownership stake that I don't ever have to worry about anything again? And that's kind of what it sounds like is being presented here. So, but I think Tim's preference is no question to remain in Colorado, to remain and see this thing through that he built.
We have a lot of great commenters, and we've talked about some of them. This is one of those days where I got to not pay attention to the chat. I may just close the chat. I'm like trying not to get annoyed. So,
I'll tell you, here's what's funny though, Matt, because my perspective, you know, helping build DNVR, being part of a team that's trying to do something over, you know, start a new media company. Like, how many, the new media companies is a miles long graveyard of failures out there. One of the things you learn is just like how messy and difficult all of these things are. And it's so funny whenever you see people, like, we receive a lot of criticism from people on the outside that are connecting dots that don't make sense, or they heard a rumor here and they extrapolate a thing here and they go for it. And like, when I'm reading these comments here, like, I see the same stuff. Like, there's a lot of people that just discount, like, oh, well, he screwed up the Michael Porter extension, so like, of course he's an idiot, get him out of here. And it's like, guys, those things are important. I'm not trying to discount, like, there's no question Tim has had some major misses or major things that you look back and go, man, if you could take that one back, you definitely would. The Tyler Lydon draft, he'd be the first one to tell you that. But the more important thing is you have to step back and look at the aggregate. You just go back to 2015 and think, okay, what teams have actually built a better culture, a better infrastructure, and a better roster and better than him over that time frame? And it's like almost no one. So it's so easy to criticize the little details, but you don't understand how important it is that you found Nikola Jokic and have made him extremely happy and content to be here. And honestly, that's 90% of the job.
I mean, built a winning culture, established a good program, good development program. Like, they've had to trade guys because they've developed too many good players. A lot of the comments that are about, like, why would this matter or whatever, like, a lot of these are coming from people whose names end with itch. So
you think so? I don't know, man. Like, because I get this from a lot of different people that say that same thing. And I'm like, you don't understand how important and how difficult a culture is. I mean, look at Philadelphia. They have a process. They have a GM that is largely thought of as one of the best GMs of the last decade, right? And Daryl Morey. And he is. He's very, it's funny because him and Tim have different skill sets. They're good at different things in this. But guess what? Would you be surprised if Philadelphia fell apart this offseason? Disastrously, and Joel Embiid was not there by next year. Like, no, right now you're looking at it and you're thinking the part that Tim Conley nails is the part that good GMs have failed, and like, it falls apart at the seams and breaks at the seams. So to me, people discount how important that culture is and that, like, everybody moving in the same direction is. It's so hard to do at any level, but especially at the NBA level where you have all these people making millions and millions of dollars and everybody with different people with different agendas and this or that, to be moving in one direction is just, it's honestly the most impressive part of the Conley era.
Last thing I want to talk about here before we take a break is there is something to be said here for him going to a division rival. Like, the Wolves made the playoffs. They have a pretty good team. I think they're like 2-3 moves away from being a real threat. Right. I know that you're not a believer in Carl Anthony Towns, which actually is fine because, like, they got Ant Edwards, even if you want to, like, there's a lot of ways that this could go. Also, I just think that part of one of the things I think that has been a problem for them is they're just losing culture. They're losing identity. And that's actually, I think, worn on Kat a lot. And I think having a guy that makes that, because Tim's really good at building relationships. Conley's really good. Like, Conley's really good at managing player relationships. For him not being a former player, he builds really strong relationships with the players.
Yeah.
So I think that there's like a degree of like this. I mean, of all the teams for this to happen with, this isn't the worst one, but it's a pretty bad one.
Yeah, it is definitely a pretty bad one. there's no question about that. There's another part of this that's interesting, that Tim Conley and Michael Malone are pretty different. They're both hoop heads. Like, they both love basketball. And I always think that differences create a good tension. And I don't mean tension as in they despise each other. I mean, it's like there's sometimes pushing in different directions that it, at its best, they cover all bases. You get, it's almost like left brain and right brain. You get like, you get the best of both when everything is in perfect balance. Chris Finch to me is more of a Tim Conley guy. And the best example I can give you of this is, I always bring this up, but Isaiah Hartenstein didn't play. Ibrahim JaVale McGee didn't play. Then you go to no center. Like, to me, this is a almost philosophical difference. Hartenstein, by the way, might be the starting center for the Clippers, and the Clippers might be one of the favorites next year to make the finals. Chris Finch, to me, is a guy that if you gave him Isaiah Hartenstein, he would have been playing a ton of minutes. If you give him Malik Beasley as a sophomore, he'd be playing a lot of minutes. Like, Chris Finch is a guy that is more open to is much less traditional, much more relaxed and creative and this or that. And I think those two together, I think would actually be a really, really good pairing. So that's one thing I look at and I'm like, I think Tim Conley is good at finding the ingredients and Chris Finch is very good at cooking with strange ingredients.
Joe says, so Malone drove him away and the Crockies chose Malone? No.
No, for real. You gotta be so careful here. I think those two, like I said, part of being a good leader is you can work with a lot of different people. And I think Tim, like I said, there's a good tension there where maybe some of Tim Conley's fast and looseness is reined in by Michael Malone in a way that works to create, to complete the culture. But yeah. I just also think there is a part that's left on the table with Michael Malone, as great as
And there are probably things, like there are things about Mo that's frustrated the front office. You know.
Oh, no question. No question. And there's things about the front office that have frustrated Mo. There's no question.
Malone. And likewise, if he goes to Minnesota, there's going to be things about Chris Finch that are going to frustrate. Like, that's just how it goes. Like, it's a hyper-competitive environment. Everybody's got those kind of ideas.
On the other side, we should answer this question. If ownership doesn't step up, can we say they just aren't serious about contending? I think that's a fair question that maybe requires a little bit more nuanced answer, but it's a good one. We get asked a lot.
Let's answer that after the break. First, I want to tell you about Sakara. Feeling your best starts with what you eat, and Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and truly enjoy it with delicious, plant-rich, transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in your best body. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. Their nutritionally designed, chef-crafted breakfast, lunches, and dinners are made with powerful plant-rich ingredients, helping boost your energy, support your digestion, curb your sugar cravings, and get your skin glowing. Plus, it's all delivered right to your door. They offer plant-rich wellness essentials that help you create a body you love living in. From their best-selling metabolism super powder to the foundation, their daily supplement packs, Sakara's products are designed to support your wellness goals anytime, anywhere. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/lockedon20 or enter code lockedon20 at checkout. That's right, sakara.com/lockedon20 to get 20% off your first order. sakara.com/lockedon20. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for making us part of your day, your first listen each and every day. Check out Locked On NBA as well. I'm on Tuesdays, Adam's on Fridays. Great shows throughout the week. We love all the hosts over there. Jake Madison, John Corrales, Wes Goldberg, David Rommel, who I'm with. Like, so many good dudes. Jackson Gatlin's got you on Mondays. So many good dudes over there, Locked On NBA. Insightful stuff. Check it out wherever you get podcasts, Locked On NBA. So let's answer that question, Adam. If the Nuggets do not keep Tim Conley, can we consider them serious about being a contender?
I think it'd be a bad look, especially if it's just the money, you know, because here's my belief. The money is a substantial increase. The equity stake, like whatever, I don't expect the Cronkies to offer Tim Conley equity on the team. Like, throw that part out. I think if you could get close on the money, my hunch is Tim Conley would stay. So for them not to step up to the plate would not just mean they didn't match the equity of it. It's that they didn't come close. It's that they were like, yeah, we're offering you so significantly less than this group. Because I honestly think Tim looks at it and goes like, meet me halfway here and I'll stay. Like, just meet me halfway.
I would like to answer this question in full. If again, not from D. This one. How is a team not a contender because a president of basketball operation leaves? We still have the starting five. Just add a few more pieces. This is honestly something that I got to tell you, it takes time to learn about. Like, if you ever wonder, like, what's the real value of quote unquote media experts or whatever, and what it is that we actually know, the difference in being in a building when things are functional versus dysfunctional is apparent and obvious, and it impacts everything. It impacts coaching. It impacts scouting. It impacts draft prep. It impacts the players, their happiness. It impacts how much the players are bought into a team concept versus looking to get their own money and prioritizing themselves, which causes breakdowns in game plans. It causes tension between teammates, which can eventually lead to fractures. Having the organizational structure is imperative. And if you ask, like, well, what about it? There are a lot of good rosters that do not win. And there are a lot of promising teams with good talent that don't go anywhere. You think all the Sacramento Kings just suck? You think that's what it is, that all those players are just bad? Like, there is an entire top-down problem with those teams. Like, you have at some level, you're just going to have to trust this, guys, that as much – this is the same thing as it does with coaching. I'm sorry, it is, where it's like, Malone's not a good coach. He took that time out. Okay,
right, that's one decision.
And coaching is about hundreds of them, thousands of them a year that all are part of an entire process of coaching. Like, so much gets missed because it's like, I didn't like that out of timeout play. And that's fine. You get to be a fan. You get to complain about those things. But
they do matter. They don't. You're not diminishing those things. You're just saying that's the tip of the iceberg that everybody sees.
Yeah, if the Nuggets didn't have Nikola Jokic and they had a great organization, would they be going anywhere? No, absolutely not. But I will tell you, like, the success of this organization has not been – if you actually track the growth of the team, it wasn't just like Nikola Jokic came in as a rookie, kicked everyone's ass, and that's what made them a super contender. Like, it was a lot of things that grew up at once, and then Jokic has gotten exponentially better every single season, and that changed, like, a lot of things.
Right.
Like, that to me is, like, a big part of this. You're right that finding the guy is the hardest thing. Developing the guy is the second hardest thing. Getting him to commit to your city is, in the modern NBA, the third hardest thing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that goes on behind that. And this is, to me, is where we get back to that central question of, are they a serious contender? My answer is no. If they don't, because here's my thing. You want to win a title, you have to maximize every single opportunity.
Right.
This is, light years is joked about, right? And it rightfully so, because that's obnoxious.
Even they've made bad decisions, though. Like, that's the thing about it, is they're a great organization. That might be the number one organization when you factor in everything. But even they make things that you could point to and be like, why'd you take Wiseman? Why'd you do that? Like, there's just things they did.
But not only that, but, like, they've tried to maximize every single opportunity.
Right.
You know? And for the and sometimes the fans would disagree with it, where it's like, why are you drafting these young guys instead of going out and getting veterans? Well, guess what? Jonathan Kuminga is really contributing, giving them great minutes. Jordan Poole may wind up being, like, finals MVP. Like, that's very possible. Right. Like, I think Moses Moody is probably going to be a rotation guy by next year, and that helps buffer them going forward.
So true.
So, like, that ownership group has been willing to do what's necessary. And with the Spurs, like, here's a good example. Like, Peter Holt operates in a completely different market, completely different set of circumstances. But within the framework of what has worked for the Spurs, Peter Holt has provided them with what they need.
Right.
Like, I've never heard of anybody in the Spurs being like, we don't have what we need.
And I think people, when they look at this, is the thing is that it's not a guarantee that if Tim Connelly left, that everything would fall apart. It's just that it becomes, now you have to nail the next part of this. Like, you have to, you really have to get it to work out for everybody. You have to, you can't waste this summer. You have to, like, maintain that culture or maybe have a new one. It's like, it's almost like an actor leaving a sitcom or something. It's like, hey, has it ever worked out where you just replace somebody? Yeah, it has. But it's more often than not, it doesn't work out. Sometimes it does. But
I mean, that's a lot of this, right? Is like, they had Masai and they didn't want to pay to keep Masai. And, like, this to me is, like, the most worrisome thing, is they got rid of him. They let him walk and they hired Tim, and Tim comes in and does a great job. So if you do that, like, you're going to naturally be like, we'll just find the next guy.
Right.
You know? Whether it's Calvin or somebody else, we'll just find the next guy. And in my experience, like, this is the same thing way I feel about coaches, where the number of bad coaches is far greater than the number of good coaches. And you will go through a lot of them. Like, if you make a misstep, you know, here's a really plausible scenario. Tim leaves, right? Calvin goes for a year and then goes for somewhere for more money. They hire somebody. He comes in. He clashes with Malone. Malone gets fired like everybody has wanted for so long. They bring in a worse coach. And 3 years from now, they go from on the doorstep of being a championship team to being in disarray and dysfunction. And that's happened to contending teams. It's not as simple as we have Nikola Jokic, so everything's going to be fine. It's not how it works. It's just not. The margins are too tight at the top.
Right. I don't know. I mean, like I said, it's funny because there are just the people that to me, it's not just about, do you have to be in a building to kind of see these things? It's like people that have an experience in any capacity trying to lead or manage an operation, especially if it's like a smaller business, which is what NBA teams are. You just see the difference that each individual makes. And it's so easy when you're not a part of that to look out and just think that this is shuffling chairs around and like, oh, this guy, and make this decision and pull this guy. But there's dynamics that are much larger than any one thing. Like, these things are so much messier than people realize. I hope he stays. I hope this Kroenke step up to the plate, pay him, and that he stays, and that they get to see this through, because to me, it is far and away the most likely option of the Nuggets reaching the championship level and getting it done. For him to leave, my own personal confidence in the team pulling that off goes down by a meaningful amount. Not that it's impossible. They still have Jokic. That's the most important part. But it's just one of those ones where I go, that things just got a lot riskier.
Yeah. Either way, happy for Tim Connelly because he deserves it. Good dude. He's always treated everybody with respect. And he's been good at his job. And I'm happy that Connelly's going to have a good opportunity no matter what he decides. You gotta get out of here. So
Real quick, you were just talking about Jordy, real quick. And
well, I was gonna say, I didn't know if you had time to talk about Jordy. I was gonna do it tomorrow, but if you want to do it now, let's do it now.
We can do five. I mean, it's not that big of a story.
Okay. So Jordy Fernandez, defensive coordinator, assistant coach, basically third chair behind David Adelman, is now gone. He joins Mike Brown's staff at the Sacramento Kings. Jordy's been a long time part of the organization. We got a lot of changes. A lot of changes going on, potentially, at least over the last couple of years. So Jordy's now moves on. That's a big loss just in terms of the organizational kind of like familiarity. It's another voice that was like a consistent part of it. But you and I also kind of said, like, look, assistant coaches, this is kind of what happens is they moved on. And if there's going to be any changes with the coaching staff, it was going to be on the assistant side. So I don't think either of us are surprised at this.
No, Jordy, I believe, had a good relationship with Yoke. So that's one thing, both being European guys, you know, so there was a relationship there. But to me, I would not be surprised if there was another coach that ends up leaving and going to another opportunity. To me, that was one of the areas this year, when I looked at it, is one of the areas where I looked at and thought Denver could probably use a little recycling, a couple new voices there. Jordy was famously tasked with the defense this year. Wes Unseld left. You bring in, Jordy gets promoted to running the defense. To mixed results. I mean, it's hard to judge anybody for this season, but to me, I almost would feel more comfortable with the Nuggets having new, bigger voices in town in terms of creating the restructuring the defense and creating a new vision for the defense. And I hope that that's what happens. I don't think that this is somebody moves up the bench, because you've got Ryan Bowen. I don't think he's going to take over. You've got Popeye Jones. I don't think he's going to run the defense. You got Ogie. My guess is that the new unofficial head of the defense is a new person.
Yeah. And I would say that if they're going to spend a little bit of money, which again, not their strong suit, they should probably go towards like really paying for like a high level defensive coordinator. I don't have names on that right now. I'd have to look at the staffs and like what I've heard and ask around about it. But that would be like the priority that I would kind of put in, is try and find somebody that's really got like a high level defensive reputation. That also, I think, fits the scheme. I think that's important too. Jordy moved a little bit away from the scheme this year, and I don't know how much of that was him and how much of that was like, look, Yoke can't do this. Like, he just can't play at the level.
That's why it's so hard to judge, because this year, those types of things are just so hard to judge.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to just be like, well, the defense was not good this year, so getting rid of the defensive coordinator is a good thing. It's like, well, there's a lot of things that went into that, like, you know, and we've both talked about it, about the personnel. But you definitely want to have, what I will say is, like, if they were to hire somebody like David Vanderpool, who there's a lot of words that he might be available again, I would be very concerned, because Vanderpool is very, very popular with the players and would definitely connect with them. But he's also, like, he is an advocate of drop scheme, and I'm just never there. Like, I've seen it work in a lot of contexts. I'm not saying that you can't make it work.
I was doing this because I would be shocked if a coach was so principled on something like that they wouldn't adjust to their personnel. But maybe, I mean,
that's been his, like, there's just like two things that he's known as, like, connecting with players and drop coverage. Like, that's like the identity that I have on him. Okay. All right, this is going to wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets.
Bones, real quick, getting all rookie is cool. He joined.
I'm trying to get you out of here. You hit me up early. Woke me up.
I know. Well, I have 2 minutes here. I said they've got all rookie players. He joins Nene, Jokic, LaPhonso Ellis, Carmelo Anthony, Mahmoud, Mutombo, Kenneth Faried, Jamal Murray, and Antonio McDice. Man, that's a lot of my favorite Nuggets. People that have been Nuggets fans a long time. That's like a murderer's row of lovable Nuggets players. So Bones joining that company is really cool.
I'm glad that he got the nod. I'm glad that there was, because I was worried that he would slip under the radar. So that to me is interesting. Like, good for Bones. I want to talk more about the fact that Herb Jones didn't make it, which makes me want to just throw things. I just want to throw all of the things.
Wait. He didn't make either team, or he made second team?
Believe he made second team, but he didn't make first team, and he absolutely should have been in the top five. So.
He should have been first team, but I can't get too up in arms if he's. If he didn't make a team, that would have been the most absurd thing ever.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have yourselves a great week. We'll be back tomorrow. Whatever happens, if nothing happens, we'll just talk more about the situation and whatever else is going on. We'll talk to you about that later. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you again on Locked On Nuggets.